Congress is set to vote on a budget deal that includes increases in military and domestic spending programs. If the plan wins the day, it ends the need for short-term agreements to keep the government running. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds speaks out against those short-term continuing resolutions, largely because of what he says is an immediate impact on military readiness. The current plan, which has some bipartisan support, bolsters American military readiness, and it increases the federal deficit. More than $500 billion in federal spending is at stake. It is, in a word, a compromise. Senator Rounds serves on the Senate Armed Service Committee Subcommittee on Readiness, and he joins us now on the phone. Senator Rounds, thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to work our way through it a little bit with you.
All right, where are we at today in Washington?
Well, right now the House has delivered to the Senate their version of a short-term continuing resolution, and the Senate this afternoon will amend it with the bipartisan agreement that has been done in conjunction with House leadership. And this is the part which would first of all say that we know we've actually got to write the appropriations bill now that combines all 12 of the actual appropriating bills that make up the defense and non-defense discretionary part of the budget. It's about 28% of the entire budget. That's the part we actually vote on. But that particular piece would be done over the next 6 weeks. So there is a short-term continuing resolution that recognizes they got to actually dot the I's and cross the T's and distribute the funds that we've agreed to into all the different departments of the federal government. What this also does is it increases what they call the caps, which is the total amount of spending that would provide about $165 billion more in spending for the Department of Defense over the next 2 years and $131 billion for the non-defense discretionary side over the next 2 years. That would be divvied up among the multiple agencies of the federal government for their appropriated use under authority already granted to them. There are also some other items in there that people have got an interest in. There is funding for disaster relief because of the hurricanes. There's actually the creation of two separate select committees. One to study the budget process that gets us away from the Budget Control Act of 2011. Another one designed to address the pension shortfalls that are coming up on some of the multiple employer pension plans that are out there right now. This does also include extension of coverage for the CHIPS health insurance program from 6 years out to 10 years. And it extends funding for community health centers, which is really important to a lot of people in South Dakota. There's another $6 billion included in it to combat the opioid epidemic. So there's a number of items in here, but for me the most important part is finally it breaks the caps and it breaks the demand by our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, a lot of Democrats who said if you're going to spend a dollar more on defense, you have to spend a dollar more on non-defense items in the discretionary part of the budget. And this says we're not going to do that anymore. We know we recognize the need to start rebuilding our defensive capabilities, and while we will spend more in the non-defense, the critical issue here is finally, after all of these years, we will start to rebuild our military up to the authorized amounts that both Republicans and Democrats have agreed to in the National Defense Authorization Act.
Did the recent tax cuts make it more difficult to secure increase in military spending? Some were concerned it was showing a shifting priorities. How did that play into some of these compromises?
You know, actually, the plan for the tax cuts, and we recognize that we've said these could cost, you know, we did about $5.1 trillion in tax rate reductions. But in doing the tax rate reductions, we expect that there would be about $1.5 trillion in actual impacts to the tax revenues coming in over the next 10 years. And so we recognize that, but that's based upon assuming that even with these changes, because although we made tax rate reductions, we also added back in money by eliminating some of the deductions that were out there. So the shortfall we believe will be made up by an increasing economic activity base. And if we have a, if we end up with a 0.4% average over the next 10 years, we not only make that up, we actually have money available to start working on the existing deficit that's been built in to each of our previous budgets. So I think that actually having done the improvement to our economy made this a saleable item to a lot of budget hawks that are out there right now. And if we wouldn't have done that, along with clear evidence from the administration that they were reducing the bureaucracy and the regulatory impact on American businesses, I think the sale of this would have been a lot more difficult than what it is today.
Senator Rounds, readiness, military readiness is a broad term for some Americans, especially because many don't have family members currently in the service. How do we know, you know, when is it enough for the challenges that we're currently facing? When do you say, you know, that is enough military spending? Explain that to folks.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And I'm a member of the Armed Services Committee, and we do what we call the National Defense Authorization Act. And in it, we review every single year what we believe the appropriate programs are and what the threats are coming in from our adversaries. Our peer adversaries are actively improving their own military capabilities. And that's both China and Russia. Both of them are actually increasing the amount of activity with regard to their military might. Along with that, we still have the threats from the rogue countries of North Korea and also Iran, and all of those have to be built into basically our long-term strategies. But if you take a look at what's happened since 2011 with the impact of sequestration, we can show anecdotally some of the damage that's already been done. These are items that are not classified. They're openly available to the public. I cannot discuss with you the unclassified issues or the classified issues, but let me just give you just a couple of real simple examples that bring to bear what the problem is. We have aircraft carriers right now that carry the F/A-18 fighter. That's the one that you see taking off of the aircraft carriers in the Middle East. Only about, well, they're of the total number of these F/A-18s that we've got, about 62% of them are not operational today, because we don't have the resources to buy the spare parts and to get them in to depot and to basically redo them, because they have been in service and at such a high tempo of activity, we're wearing them out. Another example, if you take a look at the nuclear attack submarines that we have in this country, we have an example of three different nuclear attack submarines that are due to be refueled. Now, a nuclear attack submarine can go for a lot of years without getting a refueling, but when you have to redo the nuclear fuel that's in them, it's a total rehab. And that happens at what we call the half-life. These can last for up to 35, 40 years in many cases, but at about that 15 to 20-year range, you've got to bring them in and refuel them, and then you upgrade that submarine. The USS Boise is a good example where it's been sitting at dock. It's literally tied up at a dock. It's not being rehabbed. It is so far out of certification, it can't even dive anymore. It won't be back in service until at least the year 2022. And during that time period, these multiple years delay, they're being caused because we don't have a plan in place and the money to pay for the upgrades to existing multi-billion-dollar weapon systems. And it's not just once. As a matter of fact, if you add up just our nuclear attack submarines, we have over 15 years built up of delays where that submarine will not be out where it's supposed to be doing its mission. That's a waste of taxpayers' money, because you've got an asset that, because you can't repair it, is sitting at dock and not capable of defending our country. So those are the types of things that we're running into. Another example, we have anecdotal information right now where nuclear task forces in the Middle East, when that task force leaves station and starts coming back home again and is being relieved by another task force going in, they actually meet in the middle of the ocean and transfer the remaining ammunition from one task force to another task force, because we don't have enough ammo to put into two different task forces. These are the types of things. And then if you take a look at just the training, we've got F-A-18 pilot or fighter pilots that normally the training time period for them would be 9 months. Because we don't have enough aircraft that are actually operational to train them, it takes twice as long. It takes 18 months right now to train an F-A-18 pilot where it should take only 9. And the reason is not because they can't do it. It's because we don't have enough aircraft to actually train them, so we've got to divvy up the time. This is just an example, and this is during a time period in which our peer adversaries are not just keeping up with us. They are advancing into new technologies that make it very difficult for us to fight that war. And as I share with my colleagues, if you take a look at the cost of defending this country and you think it's expensive, just think about how expensive it would be if our peer adversaries decide to test us in a conflict. And think about the cost of defending our country when we're not prepared. And then think about the cost of our young men and women and the blood they shed if we actually get into a shooting war with one of our competitors. I'd much rather be absolutely so strong that they think twice about actually challenging us in a real area of conflict.
Senator Mike Rounds, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you. I do appreciate the opportunity. Look forward to visiting with you again in the future.